Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Very excited for the two people I have on the Zoom. My name's Paul Hitchcock, and I work with Harry. Harry is the founder and senior managing partner of the asset protection estate planning business planning firm, Barth Calderone. We're headquartered in California, clients across the country. Harry's a top speaker to many groups everywhere. We put on about 40 workshops a year, so he's in very high demand for education just like this. And is a Vistage member and a top speaker to Vistage. So we love Vistage, very intertwined there. And we're going to get with Harry in a second here. Also happy to have Brian Thomas, who's a very successful Vistage chair out of Tennessee. Welcome, Brian and Harry.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Great to be here.
Good, yeah, good. And I want to tell everybody, we're going to jump into this in a minute here. And want to make sure you can ask questions along the way. So put your questions in chat. As we go through this, there'll be a lot of information. Happy to address those as we go along. We'll leave time at the end also. And then for anybody that wants to get one-on-one with Brian or Harry to learn more about what they're doing, their contact information will be sent out with the replay of this video after we're done. So let's get into this. Brian, if you could start by telling us a little bit about your background, what you're doing there at Vistage.
Yeah, certainly, Paul. I appreciate that. I'm a Vistage chair here in Nashville, Tennessee. That means what I do is I assemble groups of CEOs and business owners in the Middle Tennessee area who work together to grow our businesses faster, to support each other, and really help each other get out of the weeds and help each other make the really important decisions that grow our businesses. It's a powerful tool. It's been used for over 65 years now. And it's the best job I've ever had. I started doing this after 40 years or 35 years of running and growing businesses and decided to become a Vistage chair and executive coach. Love what I do.
Yeah, no, it's great. And you and I got together on this. I know you have your thumb on the pulse of providing information relevant for CEOs, executives, and so forth. And this was a big deal as we were talking about it, which gets us over to Harry on the Corporate Transparency Act. Let's jump into it. Harry, what do we got to know?
Well, there's a lot to know, and it's a very interesting act that many people don't know enough about. But for those of us that are with us today, I think at the end of our hour together, you'll have a very, very good understanding of what this is all about. So first off, let's just do a couple of definitions. You'll hear me use the term FinCEN quite a bit. So that, a lot of people don't know what that means. It's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And that is a division of the Department of Treasury. And they are the people that are responsible for the enforcement of the Corporate Transparency Act. The Corporate Transparency Act was passed by very important bipartisan legislation, I think in 2021. It was supposed to go into effect in 2022. It did not. 2023. It did not, but on January 1st, 2024, the baby arrived. So we are now fully engulfed in the Corporate Transparency Act. Now, there's some things to know about the Corporate Transparency Act. It's nothing like we've ever had before in American jurisprudence, and I've been practicing law for over 50 years. So it's just going to be an interesting analysis as we go through this together. So let's understand a few things. There are a few things that are floating around that you should be aware of. The National Small Business Association has a lawsuit that's going on down in Alabama in federal court to try to declare the Corporate Transparency Act unconstitutional. And there are a multitude of reasons for that, and I will touch on those reasons as we go along through our workshop together today. But in my humble opinion, maybe some parts of the Corporate Transparency Act will be declared unconstitutional, but in the vast majority of it is here to stay, and we're going to need to comply. What brought it about? Well, 9/11 brought it about. And it's all about building a, we'll call it a master list, a registry of who sits behind the veil of the small businesses in America. And we, the government's tried to do this for a long time. Patriot Act, Know Your Client, Sarbanes-Oxley. They're trying to get behind who owns what type of company. And that's very important for us to understand. As we go through this together, a lot of the questions that are going to come up from you are kind of answered by understanding this one thing. If we can't drill down to who the human owner is of a particular entity, it's not going to be in compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act. So the goal is, who is the owner? So keep that in mind as we move forward. And so, first of all, who needs to comply? So this is not targeted to large companies, ladies and gentlemen. This is targeted to small companies, because this is where terrorist financing, money laundering, tax evasion, and other nefarious activities have taken place. And so it's targeted for the following. If you are a limited liability company, pre-existing or a new one to be formed, and we'll talk about the difference between the two, a limited partnership, a limited liability partnership, or a corporation. If it gets born, so if we have to go to the Secretary of State in Tennessee, Brian, and say, we want to form an entity, and they give us articles of organization or articles of incorporation, that entity starts as a needed complying entity. Trusts which are not filed with the state are not necessarily under the Corporate Transparency Act directly, but you learn you may fall under them indirectly. So how serious is the government about this? Well, let's talk about, there are penalties. And the penalties are kind of ridiculous, but they are what they are. So right now, once we're supposed to be in compliance with the act, and we'll talk about what that means, if we're not in compliance, the fine is, civil fine, of $591 a day for every day that we're not in. It was 500, it was adjusted, even though it just got started and it's only like 45 days old, it was adjusted for inflation to 591. It's $591 a day for up to 30 days for every day that we're not in compliance. If we're willfully not in compliance, it's up to $10,000 fine and up to 2 years in jail. So it's a felony. So we're not talking here about, well, if I don't do it, they're going to slap me on the wrist. It's a felony. They literally will put you in jail. Now, the reason for that is to also to understand that the registry that they're building, that the government is building through the FinCEN network, is not, I repeat, not a public registry. It's for the use of law enforcement in the United States and could be shared with other countries as well when they want to know who owns that LLC. And you'll see, and who controls the LLC, who owns that limited partnership. So that's the goal. That's where it is. Those are the entities that are involved. Now, as far as timing is concerned, so for all the, and I mean all the entities that are not exempt, that are in existence, Brian, prior to January 1st, 2024, I don't care if they're 50 years old, 100 years old, they all need to comply by December 31st, 2024. Now, the guesstimation is that is 33 million firms in the United States of America that must comply before the end of this year. There's a bill pending in Congress now, passed by the House, not yet passed by the Senate or signed by Joe, that extends that period of time from December 31st, 2024 to December 31st, 2025, giving us an extra year to bring all of these. I mean, it seems like I don't know how the hell they're going to do it. 33 million businesses into compliance. But as you'll learn, 33 million businesses into compliance will wind up looking at more like 200 million transactions. And I'll explain that to you as we get into our analysis. For new entities that are formed after January 1st, 2024, from the time they're given birth, the Secretary of State says, you are in existence, we have 90 days from that period of time to bring that entity into compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act. In addition, any changes that have to be made We have 30 days to bring them into compliance. And remember, I already told you the penalties for not being in compliance. Okay, so let's talk a little bit. So we now understand that pretty much every entity, unless it's exempt for some reason or other, must comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. All right. So that begs the question is who does not have to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act? So let's kind of run through the exceptions to the Corporate Transparency Act. And remember, this is targeted to small businesses. This is not targeted to big businesses at all, because most of the nefarious activity has occurred in the small business world, not in the big business world. So as a result, large public companies are not subject to the Corporate Transparency Act. So if you're a public company on the New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, S&P, American Stock Exchange, first of all, the regulatory agencies have already vetted you. They've looked at every single thing. God bless you. They've looked at every single thing that you've done. They've examined the size of your underwear. They've looked at your background. So we're well regulated. So there's not a need for the Corporate Transparency Act. Then registered investment advisors who are registered or regulated by the SEC are not required to register in the Corporate Transparency Act for the same reasons. They're highly regulated. We know who they are. They're fingerprinted, you know, urine tested, everything that has to happen. Venture capital advisors are also exempt from registration. Then we have insurance companies, which are highly regulated, and insurance producers that are highly regulated do not have to register under the Corporate Transparency Act. And other highly regulated service companies like banks don't have to be, credit unions, registered securities brokers and dealers. All these are highly regulated. Everybody knows who everybody is, and not so much they have to be regulated. And trust companies themselves are highly regulated, but not necessarily the trustees, and do not have to comply. Public accounting firms, CPA firms, they do not have to be registered as long as they are eligible to do audits under the Sarbanes-Oxley. So they're also regulated who they are. Tax-exempt entities like, you know, nonprofit organizations, political organizations are exempt entities. Governmental agencies are exempt as well. And the one that impacts primarily, most of the members in Vistage and many of the members that are with us today on this Zoom call is what they call the large company exemption. So let me explain what that is, because it's a moving target. And it's an and. All of these requirements must be met, not an or, not one of them. So the first requirement is a 20 full-time employees. So not, you know, not 1099 contractors, not part-timers, but 20 full-time employees as determined by state law. So we got to have 20 employees. We have to have our business located in the United States of America, and we have to have $5 million of gross sales. So if we got $5 million of gross sales and have 20 employees, we're here in the good old US of A, we don't have to comply. So let me give you an example of how, before we take a deep breath, how that looks. So I have a law firm. I own a law firm. My law firm has way north of 20 employees. Okay. Checkbox number one. We are located in the United States of America. Checkbox number two. And our gross sales are over $5 million a year. So my law firm, Barth Calderone, doesn't necessarily need to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. But Harry Barth has 12 entities that hold real estate, securities, other entities that I set up for asset protection planning, entities that I set up for estate planning. I have 12 other entities. All 12 of those have to comply under the Corporate Transparency Act. So many of your members, Brian, might have OPCO, and OPCO is manufacturing widgets. We're going to talk about widgets in a moment. And they meet the requirements of the 20 headquarters and over $5 million gross sales. But their operations are on a piece of land or a building that they bought, which is in an LLC that they own, and that LLC has to have the compliance that's associated with it. So it kind of has many, many tentacles, and a lot of people don't recognize that. Now, just to get one thing clear, because we have one of the frequently asked questions that we get, if we have a subsidiary of an exempt entity, so I have the entity is self-exempt, it met the 25 million and is the United States and has three subsidiary single member special purpose LLCs that it's wholly owned. If the entity, if the parent entity is exempt, the subsidiaries are exempt as well. So not brother-sister entities, but parent-child entities could be exempt.
And Harry, when you're advising these companies, like the Vistage Quality companies, a lot of the asset protection strategies you recommend are brother-sister entities, pulling absolutely. The IP out, pulling the cash out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Getting the equipment out, make sure the real estate isn't inside. Sure. A lot of that. And every one of them is going to require Corporate Transparency Act filings. So let's continue on here a little bit. So we have all of those structures that are there, and those are the exemptions. Now, what we'll do is what we're going to do is we're going to turn around and we are going to create a new entity. So this is for a new entity formed January 1st, 2024 or after. And we'll call it Brian Paul Harry Co., LLC. It'll be a Tennessee LLC, and we're going to set it up. And let's take a look and walk this through as to what happens. So, and we're going to do, we're going to sell widgets, and we're going to have a couple of DBA, at least one DBA. Widgets are us. And so we look at it. Are we an exempt entity? We're not. We don't have 20 employees yet. We don't have $5 million gross sales, but we're here in Nashville, Tennessee, and we set all up. So here's what has to happen. So the first thing is that once we have an entity that has to file, which is the vast majority of them, by the way, what information needs to go to the FinCEN network to start the process? And please understand, very important, that our entity, Brian, that we just formed, is the responsible party for reporting. Not Brian, not Harry, not Paul. But our entity, Brian Paul Harry Co. LLC, is the reporting entity. So within 90 days of its birth, all right, you know, it's born, and we have the document. We have to send to FinCEN through there electronically only, and we'll talk about how that's done logistically later on. The following information: the full legal name of our company, Brian Paul Harry Co. LLC. We also must include all of our DBAs, in this case, widgets are us. So we have to do that. We have to put down the physical address of our company, not the lawyer's office, not the accountant's office, not the UPS suite, not a post office box, but the physical address of our office. And we must include with that a very specific government identifying number. Now, this particular number for our entity would be the EIN number, the employer identification number that we got from the IRS we would use. Many people who have single member disregarded LLCs do not have a number. They use their own social security number. Then that social security number is the specific identifying number for that entity. And so we now have our entity as the reporting entity with FinCEN. Next step we need to do is we need to indicate who the beneficial owners are. So, but they call beneficial owners of interest, and anyone that owns over 25% ownership interest in the company becomes a reporting person, you know, as the beneficial owner. So in our particular example, Brian, you got a 33 and a third, Paul's got 33 and a third, Harry's got 33 and a third. We're above the 25%. We're not minors. Minors don't need to report. But the parents of the minors need to report if they're holding assets for the benefit of a minor. And then when the minor reaches age 18, if age 18 is the age of majority in the state, then that minor needs to report and the parents come off. So we need to report. Now, what do we need to report? So we need to report our name, Brian Thomas. All right. You'll need to put down your actual residence address, No P.O. boxes, no UPS boxes, not lawyers, not accountants. All right. We need to put our actual address, and we need to upload a color copy in the form of a PDF of your current driver's license, unexpired, or a current passport, unexpired. Those documents need to be sent to FinCEN. Now, so Paul's got to do that. Harry's got to do that. Brian's got to do that. So now for everybody that's listening, there's a better way. All right. So let's talk about the better way. It's really important. So you go to, and Paul will put it up in the chat box, the FinCEN website, www.fincen.gov, I think. And there is an option to get what they call a FinCEN identifying number. So, Brian, you need to get that number. So we as a law firm for our clients and for others are bringing them through the getting them registered, the Corporate Transparency Act, and we have a service that files with with FinCEN, so you guys don't have to do it. But we can't get the FinCEN number because you have to establish an account. You know, usually where do you go to elementary school, what's the color of your first dog, the usual spot, two-factor authentication. So you go through all that stuff, you upload your information, and they'll come back, Brian Thomas, here is your number. And you have a number. It's kind of like a social security number. And so whenever you have to report in any entity you own or on behalf of any entity, you would just in the future do Brian Thomas and that number. So you wouldn't have to put down your home address or disclose your home address every single time. And you wouldn't have to do a driver's license or passport every single time, just Brian Thomas' number. But you do have an obligation that if there's any changes in your name, in your address, or in those identifying documents, you must update them with FinCEN in your account.
Harry, Brian, do you want to throw that question? Yeah.
Yeah, Harry, when you mentioned earlier the categories that weren't required or weren't that were exempt from this law. Keith Elder asked a question via chat. He has clients who over the years have let their companies get suspended or were administratively liquidated. Would they need to report under this?
Yeah, let me. I will get to that because that's for a prior company that's in existence prior to. If that company is still in existence and not dissolved but suspended, yes, they still need to report.
Okay, but if they've been formally shut down, they don't.
If they're dissolved at the time of the filing, they don't exist, and if they've got to be shut down, and that gives us some of the opportunities that we're going to talk about before the end of December 2024.
Okay, thank you.
But back to where we were. So those were the owners that we had, our three owners, and we had to let FinCEN know. But sadly, nondescriptly, it's not just the owners that need to report. It's anyone who is in control of the entity. It's control and or ownership. So, or both. So in our particular entity, in Brian, Paul, Harry Co., guess what? Let's say the three of us are the managers. So we are now reporting as the controlling entities that as well. But let's say we hired a corporation, an S corporation or corporation, to be the manager of our LLC. So they have control. They don't have any ownership interest in Brian, Paul, Harry Co., but they have control of Brian, Paul, Harry Co., which happens in many small businesses. You have a hired gun, he's the president, doesn't have any interest, it's owned by a family. They have to report if they have control, if they have any substantial decisions. Now, what did that mean? Well, if you're the president, you need to report. If you're the CEO, you need to report. If you're the COO, you need to report. If you're the CFO, more likely than not, you need to report. If there is a board of directors of that corporation, and that board of directors has the ability to change the C-suite players, then every member of the board of directors needs to report. So this really is getting interesting at this point. So talking about interesting about scenarios, let's talk about what happened when I was working with a business chair in Texas, and we were talking about the CTA Act. And a lot of my members are, well, of course, they're in the oil and gas business because they're in Texas. And he said, let me give you the structure that they have, and let's run that one through CTA. He says, now they're going to drill an oil well. Now, drilling an oil well is a risky business. you know, they have blowouts, they have problems, they catch on fire, they explode. So almost universally, every single oil well that's drilled privately in Texas is done in the form of an LLC. That is a reporting entity. No doubt. No question. He says, and now how did it get its funding? Well, usually four or five guys or girls will invest in that oil well. And usually how do they do that? In their own LLCs. So they form an LLC to be the investor in the oil well. So I have five more LLCs, and all of those members and who controls that are all reporting in the oil well. Many times, the investor that has the LLC in the oil well is held by a holding company. That holding company and its structure is a reporting entity. And then I told you, Brian, you know, we're in Tennessee. We don't want all of our assets public. We don't want them going through probate. So we put them in a trust. All right. So you'd have your one-third interest in Brian, Paul, and Harry Co. in your family's living revocable trust, or in your asset protection trust, or in your generation skipping dynasty trust, or in all the other trusts that those of us that do estate planning and asset protection planning put together for the benefit of someone like you. So, if Brian, if your one-third interest is held by the trust, although the trust is not a reporting entity, now it becomes reporting because it holds greater than a 25% interest in a reporting entity. So now what do we have to report on the trust? Who created the trust? Because if you're the grantor of the trust, like you would be in your family trust, you and your spouse, well, you could take assets in and out of the trust. So the two of you need to report. If we have trustees, usually that may be the two of you, but it could be somebody else, they need to report, or a trust company. If there's a trust protector that can change trustees, they need to report. The people who are the beneficiaries need to report because we look through the trust. If someone holds something that we call in the estate planning business a power of appointment, meaning the ability to change the direction of where things go in a trust, they need to report because they all are involved in the control. We can't have something that doesn't have an end to it. In other words, if it just says that the ownership is in Blue Sky Trust with, you know, Jim Smith trustee or Joe Blow trust company, no good. I need to know the human being. So I keep digging through the layers until I get there. Not so much of a problem when those of us lawyers that do this for a living, you know, who do asset protection, estate planning, business transactions, we have a handle on it. We form a new entity for us, like we just did in 2024. We pretty much are going to figure out who's going to be the owners, who's going to be in control. We kind of set it up, how it's going to be held, whether it's held by another holding company or a trust. And we can figure that out so we know how it has to be reported to FinCEN to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. But that's not good enough for the government. There's still more. It's like an infomercial. Still more. So what happens here, now, the paralegal in my office, I'm using my office as an example, who filed the documents with the Secretary of State of Tennessee, she needs to report as the company applicant that she filed this LLC for the three of us. And if I'm the lawyer that recommended it, Harry needs to file. So Harry, the lawyer, and Cheyenne, the paralegal, are the company applicants for Brian Paul Harry Co., which is managed by a third party or by us. All of them are reporting. So when you look at this show, go ahead, Brian.
I'm just curious. Up till now, this all kind of made sense to me from a transparency standpoint. But do you know the rationale behind having the lawyer and the paralegal?
Yes, I do. So remember, this is only for new entities formed.
Right, I understand that.
After January 1st, when we go backwards to the older entities, we don't need that. And the reason for that is if they don't trust that you had full disclosure. So you may have made up a person. You may have made up a trust, whatever it may be. They now go to the source, just like they would. The IRS would go to the accountant that filed the tax return. Yeah. Where did you get that from? So it's another check and balance in driving home who did it. Okay. Now, if you did it in LegalZoom, LegalZoom has to report. Everybody that touches that entity needs to report who is involved with it. Now, the good thing, if there is a good thing, it's one and done. Once we get Brian, Harry, Paul Co. properly registered under the Corporate Transparency Act, we're done absent changes. So if Brian, you now turn around and sell your interest to somebody else, then of course that's a change that has to be reported within 30 days. If Paul dies and everything goes into administration and then winds up with his children, so when it goes from Paul, when it lands with his children after trust administration or probate, then they need to register. So we have that. So gifting, sales, everything that takes place in this entity needs to be registered as a change. So interesting. One other thing before I get to older entities and we do that. So you could see what I was trying to say is that, well, it looked like there were three owners. Yes, but there could be 30 reporting and 30 reporting people in our entity. The oil wealth is a perfect example of that, that needs to be reported to FinCEN. So one company, 30 reporting. So the 33 million old companies really could turn to 200 million reporting. So we have that. So what are some of the other things that are really important of concern to us? And remember, if we don't do it, $591 a day, fine. If we willfully don't do it, they could put us in jail. And I think they fully intend to. This is critically important to the government. Now let me wax philosophical for a second. One of the pillars for having this declared unconstitutional in the legislation that's floating around, Brian, is that you got all this burden that's being placed on all of these businesses. That's a burden. It's going to take time. Time is a burden. It's going to take cost because the average person is not going to be able to figure out who the beneficial interests, the controllers, and all the players and trusts and holding companies. This is the realm for lawyers. So there's going to be cost that's involved. So, for example, the AICPA, the organization that deals with the CPAs, has already told their members not to get involved with the CTA because they consider it to be the unauthorized practice of law. Of course, you could do it yourself, but it really, and you understand that when you're doing it, at least through a law firm, whether it's ours or somebody else's, there's attorney-client privilege that's involved. I think that's important when you're dealing with criminal penalties. And I think it's important that you have not only attorney-client privilege, but you have the ability to figure out what the heck is going on with all of these entities. I just think it's very, very, very important. And so, but back to where what we were talking about in the arena of the Corporate Transparency Act, when we deal with new entities, we kind of get them figured out right. But there's something that should change. Now, in every single limited partnership agreement that exists or we're creating, every single shareholders agreement that exists or we're creating, and every single limited liability company operating agreement that exists or we're creating, new language should be inserted, captioned Corporate Transparency Act. And in there, it describes what a beneficial owner is, the reporting requirements that are involved, and how the company is going to ensure that this is taken care of. Because if you and I, we sign in our operating agreement, and then Brian says, oh, I'm not giving my information, you're creating a problem for everybody else. There are no exceptions. There aren't any. Matter of fact, FinCEN's been told, unless the filing is complete, you cannot accept the filing from that entity. You can't say, well, here is 95 of the 96. If you don't have the 96 that are required, don't even bother filing. So what is it we do if you have a bad player? So give us an opportunity, but bad player says, I'm not giving you my information. I don't give a hoot what the government says. Then maybe we should get rid of them. Maybe we should buy them out. Maybe try to buy them out at half book value. You know, and when you go back and look at all of these things, I think this is the opportunity. Many of us have, like you said, old entities that are suspended, entities we haven't used, entities with people that we don't even know what they're doing anymore. We have old trusts or trustees that have gone on. Two spouses ago in divorces, they got a piece of an action of a company. Now we're asking that spouse to provide information. This is really, really challenging, but it gives us an opportunity to clean house. Go ahead.
A scenario, if you will. Let's say I've got a minority partner in my business. And the relationship has soured over the years. They would like to be bought out, but we're miles apart on valuation.
Yeah.
How do I protect myself or my business from them using this as a club to beat me over the head?
Well, they're not going to beat you over the head. So if they willfully don't provide that information as required, all right, it's criminal.
And all this will pass through me and fall on me.
Oh, yeah, you're gonna kind of turn them in. Yeah, you bet. Okay. You know, to do that. And all of that's not all figured out yet. It's 40 days old and court cases haven't come about yet. But I would think that that's the scenario to get the company cleaned up. And maybe you don't want to be involved with that person. The relationship may have soured, but you may have a sour relationship. Government doesn't care what your relationship is. Mm-hmm. Government says, who are the two owners? You might hate each other, but we want to know who the two owners are. It doesn't change anything. Doesn't affect fat taxes, doesn't affect rights, doesn't affect voting. It's just, who are you? We need to have you in the registry, and you can fight all you want. So that happens there. But so I think every document, every new document coming out needs to have CTA provisions. Every old document needs to be modified so the members of the organization have some sense as to what's going on with the CTA. Now, so another issue that we face is that there's an awful lot of information that's going to be rolling around. All of a sudden, passports, driver's license, names, home addresses, all this information is flowing between people, their lawyers' offices, the government lawyers' offices to the government, which says all of us better have encrypted means of moving this around and appropriate protected portals, because all this is a perfect opportunity for people who want to do bad to try to find ways to pick up all of this type of activity that they could use for bad reasons. So you have the cost of data security that's going to be associated with the Corporate Transparency Act. So let's just look back for a second at all the pre-existing ones. So everything is exactly the same, except we don't need to report the company applicants. So who the lawyer and the paralegal have put it together is not required, but who the beneficial owners are, who the company itself, how it's held, how it's owned, all those same characteristics that we just went through must be reported by, as the law stands right now, December 31st, 2024, to the government. So that's quite a task, to say the least.
Harry?
Sure.
What about DBAs?
All DBAs need to be reported. All DBAs. Remember what they're looking for. Who, what, where, for, and why. You can't hide behind a DBA. You know, the legal name may not be the one that's in the public. Everything needs to be reported. So all of those are, I think we kind of got the gist of everything that has to happen with all of the parties. And I guess the saving grace is that it's one and only, one time only. If people are asking, is it an annual reporting requirement? And the answer is no. It's not. It's one time bringing it up to speed and getting it done. So what's the takeaway from this? Is it going to be unconstitutional? I don't think so. I think it's here to stay. Maybe some of the criminal penalties will get abated a little bit. It seems a little nuts. And again, waxing philosophical, benefit and burden. So the benefit is, allegedly, to root out terrorist activities, money laundering, tax evasion, and things of that nature. Just based on my experience over many, many decades, I don't think it's going to do that. I think that the bad players are going to find a way around it. They'll use AI to generate humans that really aren't humans. They'll find a way around that because the bad guys are always the bad guys. It's like you have to, all the good guys have to have all the licensing to get their guns, and the bad guys don't care. They get their guns anyway. So if you take away the license from the good guys, then only the bad guys have guns. So I think this is the same thing here. I think 33 million plus businesses are going to be burdened by this. We hope that the federal government will keep the integrity of the confidentiality of this registry safe, but we know how that goes. Now, of course, we noticed lately in the news, someone who, you know, let out Trump's tax return got 5 years in jail, but still it got out. All right, so you have that same scenario. Do we trust the government? I don't think we have much choice because the penalties are so steep if we don't do it. So I think all of those issues are coming to play. It's something new, something we've never seen before in America. And I think to some degree, it's highly problematic. But we need to comply and we need to do it. So with that, I think that it's a really great time for Paul and anybody out there who wants to fire away questions, that we do questions and answers for the amount of time that we have left.
Yeah, I mean, I've got questions emailed in ahead of this too, a few. And one of the questions that comes up, Harry, is for real estate investors, because we've had real estate investors say, okay, the rental income properties, well, I just won't put it in an LLC. I'll hold it in my own name so I don't have to do CTA. But what's problematic about that?
Well, it's really problematic. So that, and that's one of the chilling effects that happen. People say, well, if I take my, so Brian, if you take, you have a piece of property and you have some bank accounts, some brokerage accounts, or fractional interest that you own directly in a company, and you just have them in your living revocable trust, you have no CTA compliance. There's no entity that's involved. So if you have that piece of real estate and you don't have it in an appropriately designed LLC or limited partnership, then you're going to have personal liability to the full extent of your net worth for landlord tenant problems. In addition, if there's a liability to you, you crash your car on a road in Tennessee, I sue you, I can go back down and take your property away. There's no walls around that. So from an asset protection and estate planning point of view, we need to have those walls. We need to have the LLCs. And if we're going to have the LLC, we're going to need to file it with the CTA. What we've done as a law firm, whenever we're filing a new entity is from January 1st, 2024 on, we just bake it in. We will do the CTA stuff. It will be, we'll do the analysis. We're going to say who's going to own it. And then we have a service, because the other side of it, Brian, is even if you've done all the analysis, now you're going to sit down on Sunday with the FinCEN website and enter, you have to get all that information from all of those 35 or 40 different owners and controllers, and then sit down at FinCEN's website and try to fill it out and get that all that information in. That's nuts. You'll be there for hours trying to get that filled out. So we've hired people who figured out the Byzantine way of doing that. And I think for $250, we file it for them, which is relatively inexpensive. So there's the answer, that you shouldn't have a chilling effect on what is right to do, because we need to say who the beneficial owners are and the human beings are who are behind the act.
And I'll say, too, that we're, again, sending out the replay, and we'll send you out information on how to get the help. If you have questions, anything that pops up, we'll have a way to do that and get connected to an attorney to figure out your situation and get things filed as needed.
Yeah. And then, you know, other people, just one other question we've gotten in other groups is like an ESOP. I have an ESOP, and that it's an ESOP-owned company. Does the ESOP need to report? And the answer is yes. If the ESOP owns more than 25% of the company, then the trustee of the ESOP would need to report. However, Brian, in most cases, you don't see many ESOPs formed in companies that have less than 20 employees or less than $5 million worth of sales. So you always got to keep the threshold in line. We're really seeing the issue is in all the brother-sister entities that we all have. You know, my 12, God knows how many you have, all the ones that we have, which is proper because we don't want to have liability from a piece of real estate or some equipment that we own. So we put it inside an LLC. People have airplanes in LLCs, artwork in LLCs, and some of those are held by trusts. And then The trust itself, like I said, is not a reporting entity. But if the trust owns a reporting entity, the trust becomes a reporting entity. So it kind of works both ways. And that's where it gets a wee bit complicated. But so, not a problem. Go ahead.
A simple scenario, I own a widget company, or I'm a co-owner of a widget company. And we also own the building. Me and other people own the building in a separate LLC, and I'm leasing the building from that company. You know, the widget company is leasing the building from the LLC that owns the building.
Correct.
If I'm paying more than $5 million a year in lease payments, am I exempt?
Okay. No. It would sound like you mean the real estate company?
Yes.
Okay, so remember, there's three components. I doubt it has over 20 employees.
Okay. So it's 20 employees
and headquarters and 5 million. So if that company that owns the real property has 20 or more full-time employees and has over $5 million worth of gross rent, yes, it'll be exempt.
Not often, yeah. Okay.
No. But that's not who they're after, because the nefarious activities occurred where someone owns a hair salon in downtown Nashville, and that hair salon, which has two stylists that are in it, looks really good, but it was actually a place where the cartel laundered money. Yeah. That's where they happen. They didn't happen at the broker-dealer firm that has 30 brokers that are there that are registered by the SEC. It's Joe's Balloon Shop. And Joe's Balloon Shop is where, behind the scenes, you know, you see it if you look at The Sopranos, everybody. It's those are the front companies that are being used for nefarious activities. This is what it's targeted for. So unfortunately, we're all caught up in it, you know, at the same time. And this is a gallant attempt. I just don't know whether it'll work or not, but let's try.
Yeah, I have to say, my reaction, 30 days. Report changes seems like a very short period.
Yes. So let's talk about that. So you got that bill. So right now, here are the timelines. But once again, existing companies by December 31st, 2024. New companies, 90 days from time of birth. And changes, 30 days. All right. So the legislation that's now moving through Congress, and I can assure you, the CTA is going to be modified several times over the next number of years, changes mostly the timelines. So the time, and I'll give you the one draconian aspect of it. The timelines that are being changed is to extend the December 31st, 2024 to December 31st, 2025 for pre-existing entities. The next thing is for changes to move it from 30 days to 90 days to match what it is for a new entity being formed. The draconian
seems
aspect,
much more reasonable.
Yes, but along with that, you know, Congress giveth and Congress taketh away. So along with that is this, it's really poorly written language, but here's the interpretation of what it is. That's the direction to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network that there are no exceptions, meaning that you can't go to me and say, we're able to get five of our six people that are required. You have to have all six, or FinCEN cannot accept your submission. And that's really interesting, because like you said, one person can hold everything up, and now the company goes out of or not in compliance, and there's a $591 a day fine. To who? Well, it's to the company. But how does the company pass that on to the sixth person? These things are still unknown. Now, the other person could be held because it's willful disregard of the law. They could be held criminally liable, but the company can be held civilly liable for not being in compliance, which is basically forcing companies to deal with that peripheral stuff. It's also forcing us to sit there and say, you know, like you had those three or four entities that have been sitting on the shelf, right, that you really don't use, but you had and maintain them for years. Well, if you're not going to use them, you got to either register them with the CTA, which is not a big deal, by the way. You do it once and one and done, or you've got to dissolve them before we file it. And then they have the other issue is, okay, at the time that we filed, we had 21 employees and our gross sales were $5.3 million. 3 months later, 4 months later, we fell on hard times. We had layoffs. Now we're at 19 employees and $4.5 million worth of sales. Well, guess what? We became a reporting company. when that happened, and we had only 30 days to report to be in compliance. Seemingly ridiculous and not well thought out. And then the other thing is when you have a trust and you have a professional trust company, for example, we do a lot of asset protection trusts, both offshore and in Nevada and other states, really, really protective for our clients to protect them from the claims of third-party creditors. Now, so we have a Nevada trustee that's helping us with a Nevada asset protection trust. And so now if we have an LLC, so we have Thomas Capital Holdings LLC that has $1.5 million worth of stocks, bonds, and cash, which is now held by Thomas Capital Trust, which is a Nevada asset protection trust, of which Brian is the investment trustee, but we have a Premier Trust Company. It was the Nevada Trust Company as the administrative and benefits trustee. And trust companies by themselves are exempt, but I have five trustees over Premier who have the ability to help transact inside Thomas Capital. All five of those trustees need to report because they can move assets within the trust. The trust companies are pushing back and saying, no, we're a regulated trust company, therefore we're completely regulated and we don't have to do that. Government is now saying, well, under the current law, every trustee, not the trust company, but the trustee needs to report. But now they've taken that under advisement as to whether or not a professional trustee in a regulated trust company needs to be reporting. So if there's this movement that's going on within the CTA, but to all of us that are all together on this call today, the question is don't wait, just get it filed. Even if it's declared unconstitutional, whatever it may be, get it filed, get it done, get it behind you. It's not worth it. And people say, well, how do they know, you know, whether I filed it or not? Well, remember, it's for every company that's registered with the Secretary of State's office. So the Secretary of State's office in Tennessee is going to report all of its entities to the federal government, and the federal government is going to look and see whether those entities have been reported to FINRA. So there's a sharing of information, just like they share tax information, they're going to share entity information. And that's
how they're going to be kind of busy, aren't they?
you know, if they're going to be busy, I think they're underfunded. I don't think that I think it's ridiculous. Truthfully, it's just ridiculous. They're not going to be able to do it, but it's like anything else. Everybody's got to file a tax return and multiple tax returns. IRS is busy. IRS has hundreds of thousands of employees. FinCEN does not have that. It's a voluntary compliance system. Yep. And if we don't comply, they got fines. And
Harry, let me ask you two more questions. One, sure. Because I know one of my members is going to ask me this question after he watches. He's not with us today. He's going to watch the recording.
Sure.
He was slightly under $5 million in 2023. He's going to be well over $5 million in 2024. 100 employees. Does he need to report?
In 2024? It's when he files it. So if he's going to file in 2020, he's okay. A pre-existing entity, right?
Yes.
So pre-existing entity has until December 31st, 2024, and it's on the date of the filing. What is the characteristics?
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
And that's one question. You have another one?
Yeah, and Paul mentioned, so I know we're going to be sending out the recording and a link to the recording and follow-up information. So if people want to follow up with you or your firm to pursue this further, I know that'll be in the follow-up. Is there any other way you would recommend?
That's about it. You know, one of the things that we can do, no matter where they are in the country, it's federal law, is for the existing, we could do an analysis of who all needs to report. We decided to do $595, really, really, really inexpensive for that analysis by an attorney. So we could look at the trust, we could look at the organizational documents, we could look at the ownership, we could look at all, remember we had that really complicated oil well? We looked at that, $595 to tell you who it is. And then we have a service, if you want, you don't have to, we'll take all that information and have people sit behind computers and upload it and just give you a document that says green light for FinCEN. So all in for an older entity is $750. And for new entities, we're only adding into our costs for forming new LLCs, corporations, limited partnership, $395. So not a lot of money. It's It's and changes are like $99. We're doing this as an accommodation for all of our clients and for all of our anticipated clients.
And I put my email up in the chat there. If anybody wants to reach out, get you connected to Harry and the team to get, you know, input, complimentary input and help if you need it, filing and figuring
and
things out.
And if this opens up the door, Brian, for people taking a good look at their estate planning and their asset protection planning, then I would say CTA was good because we all need to do that. But it's a bit of a pain, but everybody should be able to get it done.
So it seems like I should just get my FinCEN number, and then all the entities I'm involved with, I just give them my FinCEN number and say,
Correct.
Call me if you need anything else.
Correct. It just, I don't, once I got a FinCEN number, I don't need your address and I don't need your passport or your driver's license. I just have Brian Thomas number, so-and-so. Wherever you're required to report, I just put it in. You have the responsibility of maintaining the integrity of your FinCEN account. And that's it. Makes it simple.
Thank you, Harry.
All right, guys. Well,
all right, thank you, everybody.
Thank you all very, very much. Top of the hour. Everybody have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us today. Brian, pleasure to meet you. Hopefully we can talk to your groups at some time about other things.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Thanks, feel everybody. Better. Take care. Bye-bye.